Today's meeting of the Education Committee. We'd like to greet our committee members and welcome those of you in the audience. We have two bills today. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2193, and it looks like Brett West is anxious to come and talk to us. Mr. Keller.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Chair and members, this is a staff measure summary. Requires the State Board of Education to submit community college boundary changes to the Legislative Assembly for approval. Amends ORS 341-085 to clarify the election process for a boundary change.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Brett, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett West. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. We're here to talk to you today about House Bill 2193. This is a bill that actually was suggested by Legislative Council and Legislative Fiscal Office as we have done some annexation activities in the past. Legislative Council believes that the Emergency Board may not have the authority to approve boundary changes on actions taken by the State Board of Education, and so that was the primary purpose for introducing the bill. In the bill, it also talks about allowing the State Board of Education to have elections around the state or in the affected territories of an annexation. Because that hasn't been specifically excluded in the past, we have made that our standard practice as we do all annexations around the state. So this won't actually change the practice that the State Board has had. We know that there's a referral to Ways and Means because of the potential cost of the elections. We have always paid for those either through emergency board appropriations or out of our agency budget when the bills come due. And to give you an idea of how much the elections have cost in the past, when we our most recent annexation of a portion of Columbia Gorge College District cost $19,004. So we think that the fiscal impact isn't large, and we've been able to cover it in the past. The rest of the amendments that you'll find in the bill are simply to make it more clear and easily readable, I believe. Hopefully you'll find this a fairly simple bill. With that, I will close and answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, very good. Thank you, Brett. Anyone else testify? No one else, huh? Brett is the only one who signed up to testify. So with that, if there's no one else, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2193, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2193.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr?
Are you ready for a motion?
Oh, yes.
I move that we move the House Bill 2193 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Farr, I think we have to refer it to Ways and Means with a subsequent
referral. Thank you for clarification, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So please rephrase.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer House Bill 2193 to the Ways and Means Committee.
With a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
That's what I meant to say the
yes.
first time.
Representative Farr moves that we pass House Bill 2193 with a due pass recommendation, and we move it to the Ways and Means Committee. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, I don't know that we need to call the roll. If there is no opposition, we will just declare it passed. Okay. Okay, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2509. And Mr. Keller.
Thank you.
Jim, we'll get this right.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2509 removes the sunset on requirement that 80% of the students enrolled in a public charter school be residents of the school district within which the school is located. Reenacts the limitation on the percentage of students within the school district that may be enrolled in the public charter schools. Declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay. Very good. William Way, come up, please.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for hearing us today. My name is William Lay. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Pioneer Youth Corps of Oregon. We are a specialized charter school that works with at-risk and marginalized youth. For 10 years, the Pioneer Youth Corps has served at-risk youth, largely in Lane County. We have evolved from an after-school program to an alternative ed program in 1997. And when Oregon enacted charter schools, we became one of the first charter schools to apply, one of the first organizations to apply to become a charter school. We became a charter school for one specific purpose. We are a service organization. Our intervention and education services are specifically designed to work with at-risk youth in 6th grade through the 12th grade. These are students who, for a variety of reasons, have been unsuccessful in traditional school systems. We added a charter school program to our already existing alternative ed program so that we could serve the school districts and the families and communities that we had been working with for so many years. We currently serve 17 school districts throughout Lane County and on the borders of Linn, Benton, and Douglas County. Most of these school districts are very small, and in some of them, we are the only service that they have available to them for their at-risk youth. Some of the students that we have who come from out-of-district schools have been sitting on our waiting list for 2 years, and we've only been in operation as a charter school for, this is our third year, so 2.5 years. We periodically check that waiting list, and we've discovered that some of them have fallen off the list because of crisis. We never had a chance to help. Some of them have gone to jail. Some of them, their families have broken up. Some of them have had other problems that have caused them to be moved on to more drastic measures. Could we have helped them? I'm not entirely certain, but we never got the opportunity because of the 80-20 restrictions. These enrollment caps accomplish only one thing. They restrict the access to the charter schools. When Oregon created the charter school law, it was a good law. There was a good reason for adding those restrictions initially. There was also a good reason for putting in the sunset clause. The legislature made the right choice when they made those decisions. What I am asking now is that you do not pass this bill, that you allow these restrictions to sunset as they were originally intended, that you allow us to increase access to our program and to programs like ours, so that smaller districts that cannot support a charter school or cannot support these kind of services will have access to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Well, you may have anticipated this very well. We don't seem to have any questions, so thank you. Catherine.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Catherine Lay with the League of Oregon Charter Schools, and I'm here to ask that you consider this bill very seriously and consider it for no passage. As Mr. Lay expressed, this charter school bill will only inhibit children's access to charter schools. The Pioneer Youth Corps is not the only charter school that's been affected by this 80-20 rule. Many of them have been affected by that, and many of the smaller districts who have charter schools, some of those have even gone to the Board of Education and asked for waivers of the 80-20 rule themselves, recognizing that their small charter schools feed and serve other small communities in and around them. I think that before the day is out, you'll hear a lot more to be said about that, so I'm just going to state my position and the position of the League, which is please do not pass this. It's a harmful bill. Sunset clauses were in there for good reason, and in essence, it's kind of like, I guess a good analogy is allowing Coca-Cola to govern Pepsi-Cola. It's the same thing. It's an access thing. If the whole state said we're a Coca-Cola state, and that's all we're going to be, but we'll let you guys decide whether or not you're going to let PepsiCo come in and sell their products. There's a certain amount of competition between school systems and school ideologies. Competition is healthy. It's our whole way of government. And if charter schools are going to survive, they're going to survive because they're good and they do the job well and they're accountable for what they're set out to do. By placing unnatural restrictions and limitations on these charter schools for their enrollments, it's not only unfair, but it's also unrealistic, because there will be other ways that the same education movement will go forward. We were at a charter school convention a few years back, and U.S. Department of Education's representative that spoke there stated that in his address that charter schools were developed by the federal government as a way to keep the voucher train from coming down the track. There is need for change. There's need for multiple opportunities for kids. If we don't recognize it in this method, it's who knows what the next methods will be to get change and to allow innovation and allow opportunity for kids who just don't necessarily fit in the square holes. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Allison Walton, please.
My name is Allison Walton, and I am a parent of three children. We have chosen homeschooling for a number of years, but I've reached my limitation as far as being able to teach. I have three children who each child learns absolutely, totally different. My oldest child goes to Pioneer Youth Corps of Oregon under a waiver where the school district allows him to go to the other one. But that won't be affected in September because of the way the school districts are set up. He has been on their waiting list for charter school for 2 years and continues to wait, and is extremely disappointed that he will not be able to attend Pioneer Youth Corps in the fall because of the 80-20 rule. I know other families within our district who very much want their children in Pioneer Youth Corps but cannot because of the 80-20 rule. I have two other children who are going on waiting lists for two other totally different charter schools in the Eugene School District, and they're looking at a year and a half to 2 years wait before they can even get considered to go into these schools. And I, as a parent, am responsible for my children's education. I am the one that will be in trouble if I do not make sure that they have an adequate education. Therefore, I think that as a parent, I should have the option of sending my children to whatever school is going to meet their needs, and my children don't fit within the normal standard schools. They each learn different, and they should be able to go to a school that is going to give them the education that they deserve and that they need. I think that parents should have the right to send their children to good schools. I'm not dogging the public school system at all. I just know that my children are not sitting at the table, you know, studious. My oldest child asked to go to Pioneer Youth Corps because he knows he's the kind of child who needs structure. He needs discipline. He needs to have that ability, and he wants a career in the military, and so therefore this is a good stepping stone for him to get there. I think that a number of parents will, again, choose homeschooling and will pay for tutors for their children if they're not allowed to get into these charter schools. And I think we should do everything to support the charter school system within Oregon. It seems to be working well, and I've become extremely involved this year versus last year in the charter school system, and I intend on becoming more involved because it's a good system. So I hope that you consider this and do not vote in favor of this. Vote against it, please. Do you have any questions?
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little unclear as to your child not going to Pioneer Youth Corps. Did you say that he did go there last year?
Oh, he's currently attending Pioneer Youth Corps, but he's going from junior high school to high school, and they require that they attend the first semester of the school year at the public school system in the district that we live before they will give him a waiver to attend the alternative ed program again. And so therefore he will lose a half a year at Pioneer Youth Corps because he will have to attend a whole new school.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So actually that situation has nothing to do with the 80-20 rule.
Actually, it does. If the 80-20 rule was not into effect, my child would have a seat in Pioneer Youth Corps. The 20% rule that they have in place right now is full, and therefore they're not allowed to add him to the charter seats because they're all full.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Galto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we ask the gentleman from the Pioneer School to return up here?
Yes. Yes, please. William, come on up.
So are you finished?
Sorry to interrupt, but to make it clear, the Pioneer Youth Corps runs two programs. We run a public charter school and an alternative ed. Our alternative ed program, the academics are much more basic because the students are typically further behind in that particular program academically, so they need a lot more help to get caught up. Some of our students, her son here, has been placed in the alternative ed program under a waiver from the charter school, under referral from their district school. But that waiver is going to expire. And as a result of that, because he's from an out-of-district school, I don't have a seat for him. So he's going to have to vacate the school at the end of this year. I have a few other students that are in the alternative ed program on an agreement with their local district until a charter seat comes available. But if this rule stays in effect, there will be no seats, a lot of district seats available. So that student and several others will have to leave the program.
Mr. Chair, perhaps the gentleman would like to have a seat. I have a question.
Yes, yes, that'd be fine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was, you referenced the kind of students that come to the Pioneer Youth Corps school, and you described them, some of them, as marginalized youth. So I just wanted to know what that meant to you.
Marginalized youth refers to kids who they're not quite adjudicated. It's kind of a term that maybe I've coined it. I'm not sure. I've heard it used. I am a clinical counselor and social worker. And it's typically used to describe kids who are not quite in enough trouble to get them into the juvenile services programs, not quite in enough trouble to get them incarcerated. They're kids who are just beginning to show signs of problems. Typically their grades are starting to slip, they're starting to skip school. We're seeing the beginnings of arguments between mom and dad, whereas 6 months ago they took out the garbage without any problem, and now they're complaining and threatening to run away. And part of our goal is to not only work with school districts but also with juvenile services agencies to catch those kids who, for lack of a better term, let's say, are not quite bad enough to mandate services, and to try to keep them from going down that road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, if I might. Mm-hmm. Is your school then actually a combination private and charter school?
Actually, we're registered with ODE on all three levels, private school, alternative ed, and charter school. We keep those programs separate from each other. The students in the alternative ed program, although they wear the same uniforms and follow the same rules, they have a separate classroom, separate instructors, separate curriculum.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. then if I'm understanding this situation correctly, the waiver of the 80-20 rule would allow an out-of-district student to take the place of an in-district student?
No, ma'am. The waiver of the 80-20 rule would allow more access to students to our program. Right now, I have about 110 students in my charter school. Out of that 110 under the 80-20 rule, I'm allowed to have 22 from out-of-district schools, from districts other than the Eugene School District. I have 13 students that come from Cottage Grove School District alone. That means that I have to spread 22 seats out among 16 school districts. They include districts like Harrisburg, Junction City, Monroe. These are all very small school districts. And I've even got students, I've got one student that comes as far away as Albany to our school. And those are all out-of-district students. Because of the type of students that I serve, I don't always fill my Eugene seats because of the fact that I work with at-risk and marginalized youth, and not every kind of student responds well to the type of program that we work with. So because I don't always fill my Eugene seats, that restricts the number of seats I can offer to other school districts because it has to be an 80-20 balance. So if I have only, you know, say 60 Eugene seats, then I can only offer fewer out-of-district seats. The way we've worked that out with some of the districts that I've served for so many years, like the one that Allie's child comes from, they've agreed to give the student a referral so that the student can go into the alternative ed side of the program. Now that works for a little while until that student gets caught up academically, and then they're ready for the much more rigorous academic program that we're able to offer in a charter school. As a result of the 80-20 rule, her student and a number of others are not going to have access to the program, and we will continue to have the type of waiting list that we've got now. I've got 32 students on a waiting list right now. Some of those students are not in the program at all, and a few of them have been able to access the program temporarily by going into the alternative ed side.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lay, I a follow-up question on Representative Hobson. You say you have 110 seats in your school. Is that 110 occupied seats currently?
No,
it isn't.
Well, I have my agreement this year, my charter allows for 138 seats in my school.
Mm-hmm.
There are only about 110 of them that are full right now.
So in your example, if the 80-20 rule were sunsetted, you could essentially bring yourself much closer to capacity without affecting the number of people that you're serving from within the district.
That's correct. It would also mean that all of these students that are now sitting on the waiting list, I could take them all in.
So because the district that you reside within is not able to provide enough students to get you closer to your capacity, there are people actually waiting while seats are empty inside of your school.
Yes, that is correct. But even if I was up to capacity, I would still have a waiting list.
Yeah, I understand.
It would be smaller, but I would still have a waiting list.
I understand. Thank you, Mr. Way.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, excuse me. Yes, Representative Bakken?
Oh, not of these folks.
Oh.
With your permission, though, I do have one question for the nice lady who testified a moment ago.
Catherine.
Yeah. It's Catherine. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to turn our table into a revolving revolving chairs here.
How may I help?
All right. Thank you for coming back up to the table. Do you have a copy of the bill in front of you by any chance?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't.
I wanted to ask you a question about Section 1, Subsection 2, which begins the total number of students enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
You see that?
Yes.
And which is also affected by this bill because it's reenacted by this bill. And that section, of course, says that a charter school, the number of students in charter schools can't be more than 10% of the total number of students enrolled in all the public schools of the district. Are the charter schools that you work with able to adequately provide their services under that restriction?
At this time, I believe so. However, as more and more charter schools are developed, I think that's going to be a real issue in the future. I can give you an example. Eugene School District has three existing charter schools. Those three charter schools serve approximately 400 students right now. If this 10% cap comes back into play and they do indeed charter the other three options that have come up for charters, that would place six charter schools in this district, and each charter school would have to share a certain amount of a 10% of the pie, so to speak. In a large district like Eugene, there is 20,000 students. Actually, there's 17,600 and some odd. If you add the weighting, it's around 20. If you take 1,700 of those students, which is the 10%, spread against three schools, that's not a problem. Spread amongst six charter schools, it means that each charter school will take a fewer and fewer students proportionally. That's not normally a problem, and I can see that the 10% could possibly have some benefit in the long term and in the short term right now, because it's given the districts time to equalize, so to speak, numbers-wise. But with any kind of system, this equalization happens. If you pour water from one cup into another cup, eventually it's going to come to a certain point where, that's a lousy analogy, as my husband says, I'm a metaphorically an analogy and a little challenged. I've never been able to do that. The point is, there will be equalization will happen eventually. Charter schools, in the beginning, are always a fad. It's like any other innovative idea. It's going to attract a lot of attention in the first few years. The really stellar ones are going to survive and grow if they're not impeded, and they will stay. Those that aren't good, that aren't stellar, that really offer nothing, are going to end up filtering away into the sunset, because as I was speaking to you, Representative Backlund, about Arizona, as we have seen, Arizona made some big mistakes. Oregon has not done that. We've been cautious here. Arizona was not. They let everybody in and with no accountability at all. We haven't done that here in Oregon. But we also have to look at the long term. If we're putting unnatural restrictions and caps, numbers-wise, natural equalization will never occur. And a lot of good programs, I can think of one in Portland, McCoy Academy, who served, again, the population that PICO serves. That school went down the tubes when they were serving an underserved population that is so desperately in need of help. That school could have survived, I think, in different circumstances with different rules. Equalization will happen. Charter schools will fill up to the point where they are serving the population that they're targeted to serve. And when that happens, everything will kind of flow back into a normal stance. But if we keep it the way it is right now, that won't occur. I think that in time, charter schools can become a real benefit to all districts and all children throughout the state. It's just a matter of accepting innovation and change. Sometimes we're awfully reluctant to change.
If I may, sorry, a couple more, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair. Thank
up.
You. I just wanted to make sure that I understood clearly what you were saying. Are you comfortable with the restrictions of subsection 2 at this time?
Up till now?
Now, because this bill is in front of us now.
It needs to be addressed, though. I think with section 2, the 10% rule, it needs to go away, too.
Okay.
As more and more charter schools are being developed, it's going to inhibit their growth, and it's going to, that's what it is. This 10% gap is going to inhibit growth of options.
So, what you would propose, from what I hear you saying, is the unfettered ability to compete with public schools for children in the district?
Yes. I would definitely agree with that. I think that, like I said, schools like charter schools are going to attract a certain number of kids, and that's when it's going to end. There'll come a point when they'll reach either capacity, or the community will have given up as many students as want to go there. And there's charter schools are specialty schools. They're schools of options and choices. My school, the school I actually work for, would definitely not be everyone's option. We're going to reach a certain level of population where it's going to stay at a certain level. But if you place a 10% cap on that, or if you place the 80-20 rule on that, that unnaturally inhibits that growth because of the proportional levels. I hate to see any option be denied a child or a parent because of numbers.
To further understand what you're saying, let me ask you just one more question. Hypothetically, because you're talking about an equalization, and I'm mm-hmm. trying to understand what you mean by that.
Okay.
Hypothetically, if there were a number of charter schools in the district, they were very successful, they were attracting a lot of students, and you ended up with, say, an entire district that was charter schools, and the other regular existing public schools no longer were in existence, is that a model that you see favorable for a community, or are you looking for something that is more a comparable number of schools that are chartered and regular public?
Boy, I would say the latter. A comparable, equal ability, equal number. I don't think charter schools will ever take the place of public schools entirely. I think we're an alternative option. I think the public school system still serves a large majority of the students. Why throw the baby out with the bathwater here? We've got a public school system in Oregon that are pretty good. We may not be at the top of the dog heap here, but we're certainly up there. We are not. Why throw out good public school systems? We need to augment them. And charter schools will do that. The 10% cap limits them, yes, but I don't see any group of charter schools ever completely outnumbering a district. In a very, very small district, it's possible because the district itself is so small that if they had two schools and both of them were charter schools, like an elementary and a middle high, definitely could become a chartering district. In that case, what's the problem? It still serves the kids.
I'm sorry. You would rely, though, on the market dynamics to dictate that as opposed to anything that was statutory?
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Balto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask a question that was prompted by Representative Abakian's line, and that is, do you believe that charter schools should compete against themselves?
Absolutely. Quality is what we're looking for. Quality in education is what the whole movement is about. And if charter schools if we don't compete amongst ourselves, how do we become better? We need to be excellent. That is what competition is all about, is providing excellence. Excellence in schools is provided because there's multiple options out there. We grow when we compete.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
I think you said a little bit earlier that it was your experience that there were certain charter schools that weren't working very well in this state and that they probably wouldn't survive because their model wasn't working right. Is that right?
I didn't state that in this state, no. I don't know of any that haven't done well. We have had a few closures in this state, some of them due to lack of numbers. A good option in Corvallis closed because they couldn't maintain their limit of 25 students. Had they had outside district numbers allowed a little bit more, maybe if the 80-20 rule wasn't there, they may have survived, and they would have continued to be a small but effective option for the kids in the area they served. McCoy Academy, I'm looking at it shut down after, 18 months. It was needless for it to shut down. It served a very, very difficult to serve population, but again, they couldn't bring students in from outside. There was other issues involved there as well, I understand, so I won't go too much into the McCoy Academy situation, but competition is good. We, as charter schools, at the League of Oregon Charter Schools, has sponsored a grant through the Colorado League of Charter Schools that talks about accountability, setting up an accountability program for all charter schools. They have to be accountable. Our school districts have to be accountable. We all have to be accountable. And I think that's the whole issue here. If a school, charter school doesn't do well, it's going to be held accountable for its whether it does well or doesn't do well. And that's the important thing.
One final question, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. Under the provision of Section 1, Subsection 2, the 10% cap, do you think that charter schools should be competing against each other within those individual school districts so that they could exist under this 10% cap? In other words, to allow the cap to continue? Does that make sense?
Well, let me give you an example. Say we have a district, Triangle Lake. I don't even know if Triangle Lake has a district. It's too small. But okay, you've got a little tiny school district here that has an elementary school and a high school. And you have a, well, say some problems in that district. Things just aren't going well. And an innovative charter school comes in and really starts doing great business, does a good job of educating these kids. And you have 100 kids. That's 10 kids that can go to that charter school when maybe 50 of those kids really want to go, or 100 of those kids, and you have a school district of 100. What's to stop a district? Why can't a district become a charter school in itself, a charter district? The whole idea is innovation and change and choice. The idea isn't, I don't think, an unnatural cap of 10%. I think it's like I said, competition is good. If we are out there providing a service that no one else can provide and no one does in quite the way we do it, we'll attract a certain number of students. And when that option ceases to be effective, people will pull their kids and walk away. I think amongst charter schools, competition. Amongst districts, competition is good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. I just a couple of questions. But first, Triangle Lake does have a district. It stretches between Triangle Lake, Horton, and Blatchley. And it's in Lane County, and it's just on the edge of my district.
Okay. Thank you for the education.
Let me go on. The principle of Triangle Lake seems to work for me. You understand that if this bill moves forward without any amendments, that it will reimpose the 10% cap?
Yes, I do.
And you understand... District 4J, which is, I believe, the district that your school operates within, has, what, maybe 14,000 students?
17,600 and some odd, I think, the last number I saw on an estimate was, yes.
So that 10% cap allows for something slightly less than 2,000 students in charter schools, in the total charter schools, which if I understand that particular district well, that leaves a significant distance between where the schools are now and where the cap is. So certainly some time to begin the equalization that you speak of.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Laurie Wimmer Whalen, please.
Oh, and Tricia Smith.
Model list, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Very good. We didn't see it on this list, so.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lori Wimmer Whalen. I'm a government relations consultant with the Oregon Education Association, and we're very pleased to be here before you today on behalf of our 45,000 members. I'm offering our enthusiastic support for this bill because we believe it makes good sense to make permanent the student composition caps found in Oregon's charter school law, and which have worked so well for this four-year experiment. The bill removes the sunset on a common sense requirement that no more than 20% of the enrollees of a charter school may come from outside the district. And this cap serves as one of the several controls that balances the growth and expansion of charter schools against the planning and financial considerations of school districts and the students they serve otherwise in their regular educational programs. I make that point because of the conversation that was held today about competition and equalization and so forth. The fact is, most children will continue to remain in the traditional school setting, and we believe that options and choices are wonderful things, but we're concerned about moving certain kids to the front of the line and choosing them over all others. And the fact remains, we are in a financial crisis right now, and there are all kinds of programs and services that are being cut in school buildings all over this state, and that doesn't seem like it's going to change anytime in the near future. The 2003-05 governor's budget has proved that we are going to continue this road of deteriorating one of the best public school systems in the country. And I don't believe that when this cap and the other cap, I'll refer to in a minute, were contemplated to sunset, that anyone could have fathomed that we would be in this grim position we're in today. But the fact is that we are, and schools cannot afford the unfettered open-the-door policy that these sunsets would bring with them at this particular juncture when the dollars just aren't spreading to the regular classroom programs. It's not about competition. It's about thinning the soup. And we really believe strongly that we ought to care about all the students in the public education system that are supported with our tax dollars. We believe also that because this does not have a fiscal impact, that you ought to consider rescinding the Ways and Means subsequent referral on this bill. There's no point to it. It's a simple and modest concept that's simply about taking another look at keeping the law that we have in force and that is broadly recognized as one of the successful versions of charter schools in this country, as it has been operating in the past 4 years, and continuing it in that particular set of parameters. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, which is a union of classified school employees working in Oregon's K-12 districts, ESDs, community colleges, and Head Start programs. And I'm here in support of House Bill 2509. And my comments will be brief today. I'm speaking to you primarily because I was heavily involved in the establishment of the charter school law and of these sunsets. And I wanted to offer you some perspective on why they existed in the first place and why we believe they should be removed at this point. When we adopted the charter school law, we did so in Oregon after a great deal of research and effort by a broad group of individuals and organizations who were interested in public education and charter schools and how to adopt a law in the state that would work for public education generally and completely, and that included charter schools, which I think it's important to remind the committee are public schools. They are not private schools. They are public schools, and they are an entity of the districts in which they are located. They belong to those districts, in essence. They are their schools, just like the other public schools are their schools. They have a bit of a difference in governance, etc., according to the law, but they are public schools. And when you're setting policy for public education and public schools, I think it's very important that you take into consideration the effect on all students and all schools, because we believe the charge in public education is to provide the best education possible for all students, not for some students, not for a few students or most students, but for all students. And in particularly in a situation like we're in today in Oregon, as it relates to our public school system, all of our students are at risk. There aren't any students in public school in Oregon today that hope to graduate and succeed who are not at risk of losing services and losing the vital pieces in their education puzzle that they're going to need in order to survive. And so we believe that it is important to keep all of those students in mind when you're trying to decide how to deal with things like House Bill 2509. When we put the sunset in place, we did so not because we thought that these requirements should go away, but because we thought they bore further discussion in a few years after the law had been in place for a while, so we could decide as a state whether or not they still were appropriate. We believe, given the financial situation in Oregon, they are most definitely perhaps more appropriate now than they were when they were put in place. We are in a far worse situation financially in Oregon in our schools than we were then, and we don't see a solution in the short term, although we certainly have every hope that you will come up with one before we leave Salem, and we're going to try to help you do that if that's possible. In the meantime, though, we think that charter schools are an important part of our education tapestry, but they are not a solution that should ever be looked at as a replacement for all the rest of our schools, or that will be anything other than an adjunct to our general education. And we think this is important so that we don't sacrifice one group of at-risk kids that are in public schools, in general public schools, for a group of at-risk kids or other kids in charter schools. And so we hope that you will pass House Bill 2509, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Bakken.
Thank you. If charter schools are public schools of the same nature as the rest of the public schools in the district, why are you concerned about a decrease in revenues?
Mr. Chair.
Meaning, wouldn't the money all just stay within the public school system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, yes, the money will stay within the public school system. However, it is siphoned off to a separate board for a specific group of kids rather than going into the general education system that all children have an opportunity to enjoy.
The separate group, sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please.
The separate group of kids being those that are enrolled in charter schools?
I'm sorry for not being clear, Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, yes.
What's wrong with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, in a perfect world where we have plenty of money for education, nothing. But that is not the world we live in today.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Scott, and then Representative Farr.
So then if that were the case, a follow-up to Representative Hawkins' question, if that were the case, how damaging would it be to your to the school district affected if that revenue was lost? The students are gone, the revenue is lost, what's the effect to the school district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, we believe the effect to the school district is a further deterioration of available resources for the remaining population in the public schools. A further deterioration of program, larger class sizes, fewer staff, fewer programs. We are already, I'm sure you know, we are already losing program, school days, rational staff, and program sizes because of our revenue crisis, and we believe that that could be exacerbated.
Mr. Chair, if I could add something to that.
Please. Mm-hmm.
The other problem is that, in fact, new schools could be created without the caps within a district, and we have school districts all over considering and, in fact, closing schools as a way to cope with the terrible loss of funding that we're already experiencing. And when the caps are gone, you have on one hand districts trying to cope with diminished resources and spend them as frugally as possible, oftentimes by putting the kids they have in their district in fewer and fewer buildings with fewer and fewer staff, and closing down some of the schools and really making some painful choices. I know that's happened in recent years in Lane County. It's happening in Multnomah County. There are a number of places where that is already either has happened or is underway. Very painful things to do. Lincoln County is another place. And if you have, on the other hand, charter starters able to continue to proliferate schools in that same resource poor environment, you're literally moving. That's why I made the comment about moving certain children to the head of the line over at the expense of the rest.
Representative Farr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
If the cap were removed, do you see some form of mass exodus from the regular schools from outside of the district to attend charter schools in a different district? Either.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, mass exodus would be too strong a word. I don't think that that's likely to happen, mass exodus. But when we are this tight with these budgets, every student is, that's 80% of that $5,000 that goes with that student. And in some especially tiny districts, the smaller school districts in the more rural areas, those are very significant impacts, even one or two kids at a time.
Then is a part of your concern the fact that more charter schools will begin springing up? That's
potentially
part of your concern. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, if I might add, we have, through the process of discussing charter schools in this building, one of the issues that has stuck with me through this process is in many public districts, they have worked very hard to maintain special programs for their students, like honors programs, for example. In my own district here in Salem-Keizer, there are schools, most of our high schools still have some honors programs, although they're diminishing. When charter schools provide, as one of the people testifying spoke to, competition, those honors programs are on very tight budgets. And when they lose just a few students into those programs, then the whole honors program in the high school goes away. So a few students get to go to a charter school and the rest of the students don't get honors math or something like that. So that's an example of what can happen in those situations.
Thank you. And one more, if I may.
Please, follow up.
You spoke briefly of Lincoln County making some very difficult decisions and cutting programs. Is it not true that they made those decisions at the same time they were making pretty substantial pay increases to people working within the district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, in terms of Lincoln County, we all have members or employees who work in Lincoln County, and one of the issues that they have had some concern with, as you may be referring to, are increases in administrator compensation packages, and that certainly was a concern for our members in Lincoln County when that was occurring at the same time they were closing Eddyville School. We don't represent the school board, so we can't explain why that happened. However, and we leave it to you to decide what to do about that. I don't know how to respond to it in the context of this bill.
Just a yes or no. Thank you.
I have a question. There's been a lot of discussion about finances or resources. For the members of the committee, could you review for us what are the financial arrangements in terms of a charter school student versus a regular traditional public school student?
Mr. Chair, I will attempt to do that, and perhaps Ms. Wimmer Whalen can help me out if I mess part of it up. Essentially, a school district receives a certain amount of money from the state school fund per student, and that is a weighted amount of money depending upon the individual circumstances of the student or the school or the district. And a charter school receives 80% of that amount if the student goes to the charter school. And the amount was set at 80% because the district still has administrative burdens associated with that student and with the administration of the charter school. And as I said, it is a part of the district and part of the public schools within the district. So that's why it was set at 80%. But there are...
Trish, isn't that 80% for K through 8?
Yes.
Yeah. And then for high school?
Is it 90?
90.
70?
90.
Sorry.
Did you say 90. Mr. Green, 90 or 95?
That's what I said,
95% for 9 through 12.
Yes.
Okay.
So, as you can see, that can be a substantial drain on the district's resources if the caps are lifted.
Mr. Chair, if I might add something, and that doesn't account for the fact that the school district still has last dollar responsibility for the special education of those students if they are on IEPs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob Seward? And Joni Gillis. Sorry, Rob.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Seward. I am with the Oregon Department of Education, and with me is Joni Gillis, who is the manager for the charter schools program that the Department of Education operates. I signed up to appear to you with you today to make some comments for your consideration as you discuss and resolve this bill. I must say that most of them have already been made, so I don't want to kind of repeat other things that you've heard already. I do believe, though, that the consideration that I think is most important is to what extent the public policy provides an opportunity for the local charter school and the public school to have a discussion about any deleterious effect a charter school may have on the quality of education of the students that remain in the public school. That's really what these caps are about. They're saying there is a point in time when you need to have that discussion. If it's 10% of the school district's population, or if it's more than 20% of the students coming into the school district, this triggers that discussion. It isn't a hard cap. There is an opportunity for the school district and the charter school to come to the State Board of Education and ask for waivers for the 10% or the 20%. In fact, we have had four school districts do that, and all four of those waivers have been approved. But I think it is important that we make an opportunity for schools, charter schools, to have the discussion about quality of education for students that are in the charter school, as well as the quality of this education of the students who remain in the public school system, and the interactions and impacts that may have on that quality. With that statement, I'd be glad to have you ask any questions. Joni here is really the knowledgeable one about the details about charter schools. Certainly she could answer your questions.
Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple. Did I understand you correctly, Bob, that anybody so far who has asked for a waiver has received that waiver?
That is correct.
So would it be fair to me assume that the Pioneer Youth Corps has not asked for a waiver?
Has not yet requested a waiver from the State Board. That is correct.
Okay. I have, if I might go in a different tact, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. In regard to the oversight, we've heard a little bit of information about charter schools who have not made it for a variety of reasons. And my question to you is, what kind of oversight is given in helping those facilities to see that it's not working due to any number of circumstances, both from your department and from the local school districts, because you probably have some familiarity with that?
That's great. Now I'm going to defer to Joni Gillis, who is the one that does that work.
Or even Mr. Green. I don't know who all knows the most.
Mr. Chair, before we move on, just to help clarify, just in case you wanted to ask a follow-up question, the waiver that you were talking about, that applies only, I think, to subsection 2, which has to do with the total number of students in a district that may be in, and not to 1, which is the 80-20 rule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bakian, that applies to both, to both of those sections. Any section in the law can be waived except for what we call the list of unwaivables, the civil rights and special ed, those kinds of things. So actually the waivers that have been requested of the State Board have been to waive that 20% out-of-district cap. Now, in that case, it was the sponsoring district, the neighboring districts, and the charter school together came and asked for a waiver from that 20%. So that is waivable, yes.
Okay, proceed, Johnny.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, the question was that the assistance that we were able to give charter schools, the ones that have since closed.
Right. What I'm really interested in, Mr. Chair, if I might, is the amount of staff time, both department and district, that is involved in the oversight and the review for the accountability of those schools.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I believe there has been a great deal of time invested in working with the charter schools as well as working with the districts. The ultimate accountability of the charter school lies with the district because it's a charter agreement. They agree to certain goals, and if those goals are not met, then their charter can either not be renewed or, in extreme cases, the charter school could be terminated. The department provides leadership workshops for charter school developers and operators to come together to talk about things such as curriculum, classroom management, finance, those kinds of things. We've had those two times each year. We've also provided them with opportunities for some of our specialists working in math or English or have gone out and helped in terms of curriculum. We do a part of our grant program requires that we do an evaluation of each one of the charter schools that takes a look at their goals and if they have met the goals. So I think there's a variety of different supports and pieces of accountability that the charter schools are provided.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you for coming forward. Rob Kramer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Kramer, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Charter School Service Center and also the President of the Oregon Education Coalition, and in that latter capacity worked in the 1999 legislative session with a couple of you who, as we considered this statute, and as you recall, this statute was the product of many, many hearings over several months and many, many amendments and different ideas that all went into a negotiated package that became Senate Bill 100 and passed through the legislature. I think it had upwards of 100 amendments by the time it was completely negotiated and agreed to. Now, these provisions that were here today to talk about rescinding essentially were part of that negotiated back, were agreed to back in 1999. And in fact, the idea that charter schools would be able to reach across district boundaries and take students from outside the host district is a central principle in a charter school law. It's one of the defining things about a strong charter school legislation, the ability to in essence disregard school district boundaries for the population of any given charter school. At the time in 1999, as we discussed this central principle and decided to put it into Oregon's law, there was a clause put in at the request of, I believe, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators and Oregon School Boards Association that there be some kind of phase-in of this requirement, which spurred the 80-20 rule and the 10% rule. And the people like myself who were advocating for a charter school law agreed to that provision and thought, you know, it makes sense to have some time for transition from the current system of school district hard boundaries into one where charter schools can reach across those boundaries. And so we agreed to this waiver or to this sunset provision. In fact, the notion of a sunset provision itself was specifically requested by the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. They didn't request that it be in there permanently. They wanted a sunset. Now, snap forward 3 or 4 years, we have several charter schools, one of which you've heard from today, who have been counting on the sunset of the 80-20 rule in order to open their program up to more kids from across boundaries. We have other charter schools who are similarly situated and waiting for that provision to sunset so they can expand their program or to let kids in off of their waiting list who want in their school but are now arbitrarily denied that opportunity. Therefore, I don't believe it makes sense to back away now and say, no, we're going to pull a rug out from under these schools that have been started and the people who are in the process now of opening a charter school and say, no, we didn't mean it. No, now we are going to rescind one of the central principles of what it means to have a charter school law in a state. I believe that is bad public policy. Now, I learned some things today. I heard more than a little revisionist history, I would think, about reasons we have certain things in laws and who were there back battling for this law back in 1999. But I understand that there are groups, interest groups, who are threatened, whose economic interests are threatened by the notion that we'll have competition in the public school system. I understand that. We fought that battle back in 1991, and this body came to a compromise on that question. I don't think it makes good public policy sense to back away from that now. But I do understand and appreciate that there are adults whose economic interests are threatened by this. I think the question for this body is, whose interests do we want to put into public policy? The very narrow economic interests of groups of adults, or the interests of kids who might have an opportunity for the school that will work for them denied to them by an arbitrary restriction?
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, yes, Representative Avakian?
Are there not economic interests on both sides of this debate, both within the public school system and the charter school system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, no, I don't believe that's accurate when we're talking about groups of adults who are in association who are looking for a narrow economic interest by the continuation of the, or leaving the sunsets in place. No, I don't believe that's accurate.
You make a distinction between the economic interest of somebody as a public employee as opposed to the economic interest of somebody who is running or employed by a charter school?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, no, that is not the distinction I'm making. I'm making a distinction between groups, associations of adults who have memberships and who are paying dues into those memberships.
You don't like the unions.
It's not a question of whether, Representative.
Chair. Yeah, no, that's fine.
It's not a question of my personal like or not for these groups. I'm simply pointing out that we're talking about something that is specifically intended for a narrow economic interest of a group. That's what I'm speaking of. And personally, committee, Mr. Chair, I think that is bad public policy. This decision was made in 1999, and I believe we have heard it said many times. Oregon has one of the best charter school laws in the nation. Well, this provision would significantly change Oregon's charter school law. This provision would be a significant reversal of what it means to have a good charter school law, and therefore, I urge you to vote no on it. Thank you very much.
Rob, I think I'd jump in here and kind of go back to Representative Avakian's question about narrow economic interests. I think it's reasonable to assume and say that those same adults that you reference could also have in mind the best interest of the kids.
Mr. Chair, that's possible. And to be perfectly charitable, I would have to allow for that possibility. But
I mean, for example, I did that for 37 years, and I guess I would be upset, maybe offended, if someone were to suggest to me that my only interests were my own.
Mr. Chair, I did not suggest that, nor did I mean to suggest that a school teacher's only interests are their own. In fact, my father was a career teacher. I grew up in a teaching family. I know exactly what it means to see a very important person in my own life spend his life in a public school system, and one of the least things in his mind was his financial interests. I'm talking specifically about this bill and the reasons underlying having this bill. It is specifically intended to limit the number of children in charter schools arbitrarily. Going back to a decision this body made 4 years ago, under intense consideration over many, many hearings and lots of negotiation. So I'm specifically referring to this bill and the provisions it would rescind, and I'm saying this, I believe, is for narrow economic interest, not judging the interests of a 38,000 teachers in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Avakian?
Given the theme that you just described, help me out with your notion of charter schools. Are they intended to be specialized types of schools that can accommodate kids that need particular types of programs, and therefore you might assume that you'd have a smaller number of children in those schools, or are they supposed to be just kind of a freewheeling competitive model that could conceivably take all the kids?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, charter schools don't take any kids. Charter schools attract kids, and parents make a choice to put their child in a charter school. Now, the question of, are charter schools supposed to be only specialized schools with a special curricular focus or perhaps a specialized population of children that they are supposed to serve? They are that, indeed, but I don't believe there was ever any intent to restrict charter schools to only be able to serve those populations or a special focus. So actually, the answer to that question, I believe, is both. They can be a general school for a general population of kids and or a specialized school.
What then, in your mind, was the purpose of the limitation in the first place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, it was, I believe, to phase in, and as I recall, to phase in, to allow an ease of transition to a state with a charter model, saying, well, we are going to introduce a competitive element across district boundaries into our state's educational model. Now, maybe it doesn't make sense to do that all on one date. Maybe it makes more sense to phase that in, allow some ease of transition for several years until everybody understands the new ground rules, until now everybody is comfortable with where we are. And that's what it was for. It was a transition phase.
The transition phase, Mr. Jaime, the transition phase is interesting to me. Is the transition necessary in order to accommodate the shift in money, the shift in curriculum, the shift in boundaries of the natural boundaries of schools? What is it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, I think that question would be better posed to those who asked for it.
Which wasn't you?
No.
You would rather have had no restrictions from the outset.
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, I was perfectly happy to talk about the transition phase and the sunset, and it was perfectly acceptable to me and to the other advocates.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Representative Farr.
Thank you, sir. First, a process question. Are we intending to have a work session today?
We are not.
We are not. Okay, no. Good. Then I'll just say a couple of things to statements that have been made. I know lots of teachers, and teachers are some of my favorite people, and I trust them implicitly, as most parents have to and do. And I believe that the association that we're speaking about has what's best in mind for the children and for the teachers within the association. Mm-hmm. But I will give a caveat. If I see evidence the association's not putting kids first at any time, then the association should expect to hear from me. That being said, I am a strong advocate for public schools, and I'm a strong advocate for a good education for our children. Ms. Smith makes a couple of good points. We have to provide the best opportunity for education for a broad base of kids, and I believe that charter schools help us to do that. Charter schools do help us to do that. Ms. Smith also said that charter schools are public schools, and yes, they are indeed public schools. Just to make it clear, under the current rules, kids coming from outside of the district into a charter school inside of the district, if $5,000 were the number we're looking at, being paid, the total sum, $4,000 would go to the charter school, $500 would go to the home district of the child, and $500 will go to the home district of the charter school. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, that is exactly correct.
So if the sunset did occur, both districts would indeed be receiving funds. I guess I'm not really prepared to make any statements regarding where I lay on this. I understand that this bill will be going before Ways and Means after...
If we were to pass this, move this, it would go to Ways and Means, at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I won't talk out loud about the implications of that. One more thing I need to say here. If I thought that charter schools weren't good for kids, weren't very, very good for kids, then I would not be a proponent of them. And I do believe that some charter schools are providing a service to kids that the regular public schools in the district aren't able to provide. For instance, the
the Pioneer Youth Corps is providing a different level of service, and certain Montessori schools are providing a different level of service. That being the case, if the kids don't end up going to the Pioneer Youth Corps, then there's a good chance they'll drop out of school completely, and then nobody gets the funding. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to more discussion on this. Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rob, if I were to accept your hypothesis that there are people looking at their own economic interests, which of course I do not accept, during this time of financial crisis, would not it be appropriate for those very same folks to take a conservative fiscal view of this situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, actually, I'd like to challenge the assumption that charter schools and the growth of charter schools in a district actually harms the district financially. I think quite the opposite is true. If I had a district, say, of 250 kids, what if I chartered every school in my district or had every child going to a charter school except for two? Then I would have 20% or some close factor thereof of the money left over specifically for the remaining two kids.
Follow up.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, just in response to that, no, because you've got the limitation on the percentage of kids that could go to the charter school.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, not if the sun says take
off. Oh, I see.
Well, thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Jim Green, did you want to come on up, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm not here to take a position whether in support or opposition to this bill. To be perfectly honest with you, our membership has a split on this bill. But I would like to answer some of the questions that some of the members of the committee have posed. We were one of the groups that asked for this cap to be put in place in 1999, this temporary cap. The reason was it was a new experiment we were trying in Oregon. The idea to put this temporary cap in place was if you have a district, because the way we fund our schools under an ADMW purpose, just the number, sheer number of kids that go to that school district, if you had a school district that was having a significant decrease in students in their district, and could place a charter school on the outlying boundaries of its district next to another small school district and rob that district's kids, there was concern about that. It was a way for a district to go after another district's kids, so we wanted to put the temporary cap in. That has not come to fruition in the state, by the way. The cap has been bumped up against, the waivers have been requested, and those waivers have been granted. Even if this temporary sunset goes away, and we no longer have those caps in place, there are still some restrictions that could be in place through the negotiation of the charter of the contract with the district that's going to sponsor them. In most cases, the contracts do contain something along the language of either an overall cap on the number of kids, and currently most of them have the language with regard to the 80-20 split. Representative Hobson talked about some costs. I can check with Salem Kaiser. I believe their staff did an analysis of the costs associated with their ongoing look at applications and the ongoing running of the charter school. Salem Kaiser School District has had the largest number of applications, the largest number of charter schools that are in operation of any district in the state. And I'll check with Marsha Latta, who represents Salem Kaiser here, and see if I can get that information for the committee. One of the concerns that school districts do have with regard for students coming in from another district into a charter school in their school district, and I'll state one side of the case and I'll state the other for our membership, is if it's after December 1 that they're going to begin for the following fall, the counts to the Department of Education for your ADMW for the next school year are given to the State Department of Education in December. That's not to say there isn't a correction, because in May of each year, the following year, there's a correction of the state school fund formula to address either a growth or a decrease. What happens is, if you're a district that has not had a decrease in students, and you're getting new kids into your district from another district that you hadn't anticipated in your counts, you don't receive any money for them beginning in September. You don't get money for those kids until May. So they're essentially pre-funding programs and slots for these kids, because for purposes of the state school fund,
under charter school law, remember, they become residents of the district and where they're attending the charter school unless they're eligible for special education services. That is one concern, and a concern that we had when we wrote the law back in 1999, one reason for the temporary caps. We have other districts that say, but we need those caps to go away because we'd like to create a charter school where we could draw in kids from other school districts. Those districts want to work with the local districts, and that's not to say they wouldn't be able to get a waiver, but one district in particular, Coquille down in Coos County, would like to create some sort of distance learning cyber charter school. They have the ability and the capacity to do that within their district. Their superintendent called me this morning saying he had significant concerns as well as his board with this bill. We have a split in our membership on this bill. But I can say the reason we put the temporary caps in was to preclude a district to rob another district's ADMW. I can tell you that has not happened. And there are other ways to put the caps in, but we did ask for it. Those were the reasons we asked. And Representative Hobson, I'll ask the Salem-Keizer School District to see if I can get the cost estimates that the staff gave the board. I believe it was about 3 weeks ago they gave that to their board of directors.
One moment, Representative. Jim, you mentioned you'd ask Marsha Lauder. You might want to do that before March 18.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that.
Yeah.
She has an impending birth, I believe.
Yes, she does. Yes. Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, the question that I was really pointing at with that question was the charter schools who have not made it, that have failed for a variety of reasons, covering the gamut pretty much, too. The accountability piece there involving the oversight of the parent district, that's the piece I was trying to get hold of. It seems to me in order to prove that they're not working or whatever, it takes a lot of time.
Ms. Sherman, Representative Hobson, I can give you the one example that I work with the Corvallis School District on, the closure of the charter school that occurred down there, which was the Willamette, I think it was Willamette Valley Community School. That school closed because they didn't have 25 students. I was hired by that district in order to help them through the process of closing that school down because they didn't meet the number of 25 students. OSBA did not charge the district for that, but I did keep track of my time. If I were to bill, and I was in charge of that project for the Corvallis School District, as well as Ron Corbell, their assistant superintendent, I could provide you that information. Thinking back to when we worked on that issue, we worked very diligently to try to get them to 25 students, the minimum required in the law. I can remember spending at least 60 hours of my time over about a three-week time period working with the school district and the charter school on that particular issue. That does not include Ron Corbell or his assistant's time down in the school district. It's not an easy issue to close a charter school because they don't meet certain things, and in that case we chose not to renew them for a contract, and that took additional time, but it's not an easy thing to do. Remember when I testified to this committee about creating charter schools and charter schools in general? It's a rigorous process to create one. It's a rigorous process to close one once they're created. It takes time, and in every case that I can think of except one, the district attempted to work with the charter school that was due to be closed or not renewed to try to get them to the level that they would be renewed or would not be closed. And that's Detroit Lake and the Santiam Canyon School District. Brad Yates is superintendent up there. It was the same issue, not enough kids. Molalla River was the one exception that was closed by the school district, and I believe there's information that the department has regarding that one. The other one in Corvallis, that district worked extremely hard with that charter school, and they simply couldn't get the number of kids, and it wasn't because of an 80-20 cap. It was because there just wasn't the interest in the community, even within the Corvallis School District, to get 25 kids to attend that charter school.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate your coming up. With that,
Mr. Chair,
excuse me, Representative Noel.
Mr. Chair, since we've done this already today and invited people back to the podium, I would like to have an opportunity to invite Ms. Whalen back to the table so that we can address some of the questions that were raised by Mr. Kramer. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. Thank you. You've heard some of the testimony, and I would like to hear your point of view on what some of the reasons for having these limitations in the original bill were, and what reasons for academic reasons, and specifically distinguish between academic reasons and personal financial interests would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, thank you for the opportunity to be responsive. And I would like to start by saying that my stepdaughter went to the very first charter school in Oregon, and so it was quite an interesting experience to have personal aspersions cast on our motives here. The reason the Oregon Education Association would like to see this become law is that we believe that money has everything to do with the range of programs that students can be offered in the school system. The academic value of an integrated school system with a lot of different kinds of choices to serve the varying needs of the different kinds of students that come to it are critical, as you've heard, in the ability to take every child as you find him or her and provide opportunities. And all we were saying is that when you have a finite number of resources and the number of dollars in a system, you have to spend them as wisely as possible and work with the system you have in place, the needs you have identified, and make those spread as equitably as possible across your entire student body. Now, I agree that in the ideal world, we would have a king's banquet of possibilities for all children's interests, needs. You know, you could have a tuba school if you wanted to. You could have all kinds of programs for the discrete interests of students, needs and interests. I wouldn't argue that they're always needs-based. But we just aren't in that world. We're in a world in which we have far fewer resources than we need to even meet the mandated state standards for excellence in our school system. And that's a very difficult thing to say because we have always had such a high-quality public education system. We have more kids who go to public schools in our largest district, Portland, than any other major city in the country. And we're at the crossroads of losing that. I can't state more strongly enough how serious our economic circumstances are. The academics come out of having the funding, and that isn't about any particular member's paycheck. That's about the services we offer children.
Thank you.
Well, with that, then, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.